Welcome to Grant. You're listening to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. Here are your hosts, Nathan and Felipe.
Welcome, one and all, to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Jendrick, joined, of course, by Felipe Delgado. Felipe, there are lots of things we can talk about in the swimming world. We're going to talk a little bit about a big-name retirement. We're going to talk about swimmers being involved outside of the sport. We're going to talk about the Golden Goggles. But before all of that, most importantly, did you see the Seattle Seahawks come back and beat the New England Patriots? Because, man, that was pretty.
That, you know what? That was good. Good for you guys. beat a big market team like the Patriots. And this time you guys actually, I'm not going to say anything. I was going to go right back to that game, that controversial game from a few weeks ago. I was going to say this time you guys actually did it legally, but.
Well, hey, if you want to talk about the referees, if you've been watching around the league, the old guard referees, they're really not doing a whole lot of a better job than those replacement referees were doing. There have been botched calls every week, and some of them pretty major.
You know what? They're just like everybody else. They're human beings, and they've got to get in the swing of things. You know, it's like asking NFL players after a lockout to come right back and get right back into it. You know, timing's off a little bit. So they'll get their bearings and they'll be fine. They'll be fine within the next couple of weeks. They'll be fine when it counts.
No, and I agree. I mean, everyone makes mistakes, and that's why I always thought it was just so ridiculous that anytime something happened in a game, people were screaming, oh, we need the real referees back. Well, okay, you have the real referees back, and people still make mistakes. So now who are you going to blame? It's human error. Things happen.
You know what? But I think the more I watch, and I'm a huge football fan, but watching the NFL games, it's almost like a completely different level of respect. I mean, even if they botch a call, you know, the coaches aren't quick to jump on the refs, and the players have much more respect where, you know, they keep their distance and they understand that, you know, these are the real referees. These are the ones that you have to respect. These are the ones that deserve that respect. And you don't want something that happened a few weeks ago to happen again. So I'm excited that these guys are back, and it's fun to watch. But, hey, even more important, do you see that guy jump out of that thing at 128,000 feet?
Yeah, I did see that. That was pretty impressive. I don't know that it was the most intelligent thing anyone's ever done, but, man, that's – bravo, as far as I'm concerned. Three cheers to him and a toast. Right?
120. What does that look like? 128,000 feet. My stomach. I got butterflies in my stomach just watching his view. I don't know if you saw the video. He right before he kind of gives you the salute and he jumps off. It's like, what are you jumping out of? I mean, you're jumping out of into what?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't quite understand it. All I know is that was pretty amazing. So
he nailed the landing too. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, he landed on his feet.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah, that was impressive. That was very impressive. Now, let's get to some real important topics. Now, Felipe, you and I both know that there's a lot of things we don't agree on, and our listeners are fully aware of this. But being as that we are both Sun Devils, I think we can certainly revel in the fact that this is a great Sun Devil football week, too. 51-17 over Colorado. How do you like that?
You know, this Sun Devil team is good. They've got a good defense. They've got a good offensive line. They've got a great quarterback. They've got receivers. They've got a running game. I just don't understand after, you know, so many weeks now, and they had their little blotch against Missouri a couple of weeks back, but they've recovered since, and they still can't crack that AP top 25. But hopefully after this week, we have a true test this Thursday. So hopefully after this week, you know, we'll be able to break into the top 25 if they put up a good show. So it should be fun to watch. But I'm excited, Arizona State University alumni.
Yeah, you know, I'm proud to be an ASU student. And it sure came as a football fan, it sure came at a good time. Funny story, now that, you know, my wife and I both are official ASU students, I of course had to get a couple, you know, a little ASU gear going around the house. You know, my son has this little ASU Sun Devil pillow in his crib. You know, and my wife and I, we have, you know, ASU sweatshirts and hat and stuff like that. No big deal. But, you know, people assume that particularly my wife has already gone through the whole college experience and stuff like that, and they don't realize that she has her associate's degree. She has yet to get her bachelor's because, you know, things kind of busy as the life of a swimmer can be, of course. So she was taking advantage of a lot of opportunities over the last few years, and since education is important, of course, getting back into the swing of school now. So this is her first time being enrolled at a Division I university. And it's kind of funny the number of people who see an ASU sweatshirt around here in Washington, and you know they want to talk to you about it, which is really cool. I mean, 'cause there's so many Sun Devil alumni and Sun Devil students, but you know, they talk to her and then they say, "Well, wait," and then, you know, they figure out, you know, who she is and what she's done, and they're like, "Oh, that's so neat! Like, so are you going to swim for ASU?"
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it I'm sure she, you know, the idea is kind of neat, but unfortunately, she can't. Then when you have to try to explain to somebody that, you know, if you're a professional swimmer, you can't swim at the NCAA level, and I'm not kidding. People look at you, and they just have like this blank look on their face, and then all of a sudden, a couple people, they say to her, "How in the world can you be a professional swimmer?"
Yeah, it's such a weird concept, and a lot of people ask you too. What does that entail? What does it mean to be a professional swimmer? So at some point, maybe we should make that a topic, you know, because that role, since your wife became a professional swimmer, that role has changed significantly. You know, professional swimmers to an extent are now able to make a living, and a pretty good living, based on ranking and based on accomplishments. I think it was a little bit tougher when your wife became pro, simply because it was such a raw topic and it wasn't really a topic that was defined, you know.
Yeah, well, what was interesting is, you know, back in 2000, for instance, and before that, and, mm-hmm. And she officially went pro in 2000, but
right.
Back, you know, before that, and being on the national team, you know, the stipend now, I think they're offering upwards if you're on the, you know, if you sign in to do their media and promotion and stuff like that, I think you make like $3,000 a month or something like that. And they just send you a check. Back when Megan was originally on the national team stipend, I think it was like $500,
right.
And you had to show receipts for everything that you bought with that money, or you did not get the money. So it was significantly less, and there was significantly more rules. You know, it couldn't be used for, you know, your mortgage or your car to go back and forth to practice, as far as I know. I don't know, but it was definitely a different world. Lots of money that you couldn't accept. I don't think you could even accept the medal money, where now athletes can accept medal money and still not be considered pro if they want to swim at the collegiate level. So I know that there, for example, there are certain athletes in London and even Beijing who wanted to stay and keep their collegiate eligibility so they could swim on their college team. And, you know, people think, "Oh, well, man, if you can take this money, you should go, and, you know, you can pay for college and blah, blah, blah." Well, in 2000, that's certainly a choice you had to make. Nowadays, at least, they can take some of the money and still be able to go to college. So it's not that athletes like Missy Franklin, she certainly didn't walk away from London empty-handed. So that's definitely a good thing. So I think we're making progress. But yeah, the concept of an athlete strictly in an Olympic sport to be considered a professional, I think, is still something that the majority of people just haven't been able to grasp, and I don't blame them, because it's kind of convoluted.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, and it's great that we can talk about athletes and swimmers in particular making seven-figure paydays now. And I mean, if you go back to 2000, how far did it seem like we were away from that? You know, in the year 2000, there were athletes who were making seven figures, but none of them were in the United States. We didn't have Michael Phelps yet. Michael Phelps was 15. In the year 2000, and I think he got fifth at the Olympic Games in the 200 fly, so we didn't know what was coming. But you did have the Ian Thorpes, and you had Michael Klims, and you had athletes from other countries who were making that kind of money. But great that that's actually shown up here in the United States now. Great that we have some corporate sponsorships. It's fantastic that we can have professional athletes, and I think we're getting closer and closer and closer to a professional league at some point. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, we're definitely making progress. I still think we're a long way off because those seven figures or even those six-figure athletes
right.
or even the high five-figure athletes are very few and far between in the United States. But they're certainly becoming a couple more of them, although it, I was talking to a one of swimming's agents last week, and he was just going on about how the apparel deal market is just absolutely in the pits. In this country, which is unfortunate because for the majority of athletes who consider themselves professionals, those apparel deals used to be their main source and the things that they could at least count on. Now, unfortunately, there's so many caveats built into the contract that you can't count on the money that it may say that you are meant to receive. And if you even have a base anymore, it's not much and it's largely performance-based. So, it's unfortunate. Maybe we're taking a step back before we can take that step forward, but I think in kind of the lull between Olympics, things kind of shake out. So we can certainly hope that it improves, but, I think we just need something to be a catalyst for getting consistent sponsorship. And I had written a piece for swimworldmagazine.com about the World Cup. And Jeff Cummings, a colleague at Swimming World, also wrote a piece on that, and he had actually interviewed Mike Unger at USA Swimming and had a bit of a discussion. And they made some interesting points. I think that we need the World Cup in this country simply because it's a consistent brand. It draws swimmers from around the world, whereas our Grand Prix series, which is, I think, a wonderful series, is really domestically based just on the nature of it because all the stops are here in this country. I think the World Cup makes things a little more interesting. Gives you a points race you can follow. It gives you meets that you can consistently track around the world. And it seems to me a bit asinine that the number one swimming country in the world does not have a World Cup stop, and our athletes don't tend to go for it. We do have a few, and we have big names like Anthony Irvin who are currently out there, which is great. But I think we can get more response and more people paying attention if it's in this country. And let's be honest, having American swimmers at World Cup meets that aren't in the United States
right.
isn't going to get the attention of sponsors here. So I know Mike Unger talked about how it's an expense and there's not making any money by hosting a World Cup event in New York. But Felipe, I really think that this is one of those things that you have to look long term. Right. You have to put money into it now, get people involved, show sponsors the value in it, and then only then are you going to get people to start paying attention, sponsoring it, and building up the sport where we need it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it'd definitely be a step in the right direction. We had it previous. I actually competed at the World Cup stop in New York, I think in the early 2000s, and it was great. It was great to have a place where you can go and compete and meet the rest of the world, athletes from the rest of the world, like a World Cup stop. And, being able to tour just like these guys are doing, I think they went from, I think they just ended their stop in Sweden and now they're off. But previous to that, and the other countries that they were in, African countries or Arabic countries that they were in previous to that, I think it's just it's something that the United States needs at this point to give it, to put it or to continue to have the sport in the limelight. As it was in the Olympic Games. And, I've wondered if it's more of a political move than anything else to not have a World Cup stop here because we do have the Grand Prix circuit here. So I've wondered if it's a political move, but you have to wait and see how it develops. Or hopefully have people outside of USA Swimming, create an event where we can attract talent, we can attract corporate sponsors, and I think there are individuals who are starting to do that, and we just saw that. I think it was called the Water Carnival. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nathan.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so we've had other events that are popping up, and hopefully one of them hits and is able to attract sponsors and becomes a big event. But I think you're right. I think we do need a World Cup stop in the U.S.
Now, from Jeff Cummings' piece on Swim World Magazine, you guys, if our listeners are interested, they can go check it out. It was put up on the 11th of October, and it's titled, Why Isn't the USA joining in the World Cup party. And it's a good piece. You should definitely check it out if you're interested in this topic. But a bit that I'm taking from there is Mike Unger's quoted as saying, it was pretty much a drainer money-wise, but we did it because we wanted to be a good partner with FINA, and we wanted the elite athletes to come out and maybe have a great television property. Eventually, our committees question why we were putting so much money in the meet when our athletes wouldn't support it, end quote. Now, my question is, we have had a lot of good athletes attend these meets. I know my wife, for instance, has gone to, I believe it was the last two that were held there in New York, which, man, I don't know when the last one was, 05 or 06 or something like that, and then there was one a couple years before that. But they tended to field pretty good, pretty good populations of American swimmers. I mean, obviously, at least a few individual Olympic gold medalists, which I would think that's a pretty high benchmark at your meet. So it just makes me wonder, what does the committees at USA Swimming consider athlete support? I mean, if you are getting individual gold medalists out there, you would think that, okay, you're getting some good athlete support. You're getting some of your high-level athletes wanting to attend these types of meets. Is it because you don't get, you know, Phelps, Lochte, and Coughlin out there? Does that mean athletes don't support it? I mean, that's an interesting question to me, is what's considered athlete support? Because as I remembered, I realized the attendance in the stands wasn't that great. But Felipe, maybe you have a different opinion on it, but I thought that the actual level of competition was relatively high, particularly for a meet that a lot of athletes, because of the schedule, train through. But they still made the point of wanting to go there and be involved.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the emphasis, you know, from what I can remember, the emphasis wasn't necessarily there on trying to get the greatest athletes in the sport there. I think it was more of a stop. It wasn't really advertised. It wasn't something that they made a big deal out of. So I think those times have changed. I think the marketing and advertising of the sport is different now. I think that if the United States had a World Cup stop, it should be more like the professional tennis circuit, where they do have a stop in the U.S. and the U.S. Open, to host it like that and say, okay, this is an opportunity to see the best swimmers in the world, and this is your one chance in the year to be able to see this here in the States, and just build from that. And I would think that every year it would get a little bit bigger and bigger, and then ultimately you start to attract the corporate sponsors, or you have a year-round sponsor like Mutual of Omaha that gets involved at a much higher level, and you're able to grow. But I think the fact that they pulled out of it now casts a shadow of doubt in trying to get back into it, because, you know, if it didn't seem like a good idea then, why would it seem like a good idea now? So hopefully somebody would have a change of heart and say, you know what, let's get back into this and let's see if we can grow something from this. Let's see if we can make it a tour stop where it becomes much bigger than what it is now. And I think you have to have young, fresh blood that goes in there with great new ideas that promotes this and is able to get this off the ground and make it bigger than it is at this point.
Yeah, I think consistency is going to be key. According to Jeff's piece, Mike Unger said that the idea has come up once or twice, in meetings. I'm assuming that's recently, but I really think they need to get back on it. But I think they need to think long term, because, you know, if there was a meet in 01 or 02 and then another one wasn't until 06, and now here we are in 2012 and there hasn't been another one, you can't just have one meet every 4 to 6 years and assume that people are going to realize the value in it. You need to be consistent. There are meets every year that people love to go to. You know, the down in Mission Viejo, the Swim Meet of Champions, one meet that I love and I talk about it all the time, the Chesapeake Pro-Am in Oklahoma. Right. I mean, these are meets that don't have the brand name. They don't have FINA pushing them, and yet they field great meets every single year because they have a consistent quality that athletes want to be a part of. Well, World Cup meets are going to have that quality too, but you can't expect to have one meet and the very next year have everybody clamoring to try to be the title sponsor. You need to show them consistency. And if you can show them that the, you know, NGB is behind it, other people are going to realize, okay, there's value in this because you have a mega corporation like USA Swimming pushing this. Okay, there's going to be quality. We believe our brand would fit well with this type of quality and this type of event. Let's go for it. You know, you have to be able to show that it's not going to be a flash in the pan type thing. Now, I realize it is expensive. Unger said that it's something like $400,000 to host the meet. And FINA requires that if you have a stop in your country, you send at least 4 athletes to every other stop in the circuit. And apparently that was a cost that was estimated about $50,000. Well, tell you what, I know that RNGB has $50,000 that they could spare to do this. And I think it'd be great to put our athletes in the rest of those stops. Because, again, it's not like they're just giving the money away. It's building a brand for them. It's building a brand to support their future that I believe would pay dividends significantly above their cost in the future.
I think it might have been one of those questionable decisions as well. Questionable in the sense that, you know, you have a great opportunity to build on something and then you pull away from it. And it seemed like that would have been a great part of our future. And, you know, it's one of those things where hindsight, you know, is always 20/20, but it's one of those things where you look at now and you say, well, if we would have continued, how big would it have been now? You know, if we wouldn't have pulled out a few years back, how big could it have been now? Could you have been filling grandstands? Could you have been selling out an arena? Could you have been, you know, making an event that's much bigger than it was? I think so. I think we could have done that. But unfortunately, now if we start all over again, we might have to start from scratch. So here's hoping that we jump into the World Cup circuit and not politicize the event and say, no, because we have this, we're not going to do that. I think it's good for the sport. I think it's great for our athletes, and it gives our athletes an opportunity to showcase their talents in front of the rest of the world, because it is a much better attended event than it used to be. So, and a much faster event. I mean, you've seen some of the times. I mean, Anthony Irvin, I think, just won the 50 in 20.99 or something like that in Sweden, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if you won, to be honest, but he did go 20.9. So it's as you can tell, the times are much faster, participation's up. So it would be something that would be really fun to have in the States.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. So we'll keep an eye on that. Of course, keep our listeners updated on whatever, if any, type of progress that we see on that front. We'll transition now to a bit of sad news, depending on where you're at. I know that this may or may not be an interesting topic to people, but Felipe, someone that, if I understood correctly, someone you used to train with, Mike Kavik, has called it quits. He's best known, of course, for his epic 100 butterfly showdown in 2008 at the Beijing Olympics with Michael Phelps. Of course, Kavik decked out in a 100% poly suit, Phelps in his Speedo laser, which he so triumphantly snapped the straps on against his chest after winning that 100 fly gold medal in the slimmest of margins. That was the replay seen around the world for the next 4 years. But I think Kavik has done a lot, particularly with that event, having the courage to step up to an athlete caliber of Michael Phelps and state his claim. I think he's probably not, in the long run, going to get the respect that he deserves for the performances that he's had. But he had a great career, and I think we should all applaud what he's done and what he's accomplished. But Michael Kavik retired now from swimming.
Well, 28 years old, so you hate to see an athlete of his caliber retire so early. But with some of the debilitating injuries that he did have, including the back injury that he had that required surgery, you could see why he would retire. I mean, it's a tough sport to do day in and day out when you have nagging injuries. And this one seemed to be one that he couldn't overcome, unfortunately, and we'll always have the film footage of what an epic event that was at the Beijing Olympic Games. And it's got to be, you know, at least top 10 Olympic moment in the history of the Olympic Games. So I had an opportunity to swim with Michael. Millerat, as he's known as now. I had an opportunity to swim with him at Irvine. He grew up in the Southern California area, so good kid, really nice guy. So he'll be missed. He'll be missed in the sport, but it's kind of cool that they're both retiring at the same time. And as I was saying earlier before we went live, I was saying maybe they'll come back when they're 50 and they'll do it all over again.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. And that's the interesting part is, you know, you pointed out he didn't beat Phelps. He didn't get the opportunity to beat the other Michael. And he did have some faster times in, you know, swims when they weren't in the same pool. But, you know, he had the courage to step up to a guy who people thought was unbeatable, and he almost beat him. And I know what they say, almost only counts, you know, in horseshoes and hand grenades and all that. But I think it was great for him. I think it was great for the sport. And an interesting fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, Felipe, but I believe that he's attended the Olympic Games under technically three different flags. Am I right?
That's correct. In 2000, he attended under the Yugoslavian flag. So that was in the 2000 Summer Olympic Games, young kid. In 2004, he came in and swam under the Serbia-Montenegro flag. And then in 2008, he swam under the Serbian flag, an independent country. So three different flags, three very different results. And no, we had an opportunity to see one of the best. And we should always remember as well is that Michael Kavik is one of two swimmers to ever swim under 50 seconds in the 100 fly. So and that might stand for a while.
Yeah, that's one of those things I think up there with Ariana Cougar's 200 IM that you know, unless they bring the suits back, it might that kind of performance might be few and far between for quite some time. But an interesting thing too about Kavik that I think is worth mentioning, it's a bit outside of the swimming sphere, is he used you know, his stance in the world of swimming to really kind of get politically active a bit. And I know it. It came off, you know, I mean, as those things do. It wasn't always well accepted, but again, it was one of those things that he wasn't afraid to do at a time where other swimmers weren't taking the stance that he was for whatever reason, whether it be beliefs or just fear of repercussion. He did that, and I think that, too, whether you necessarily agree with him or not, I think just the courage that this guy has shown and the fortitude is pretty impressive. So I'm sure that that will go a long way to benefiting him later in life with whatever he decides to do. You know, he's a brave kid. He's got courage. He's not afraid to stand up for what he believes in. And I think oftentimes when we talk about swimmers, we get just focused on what they do in the pool. And I think with this guy in particular, there's lots more to him outside of the pool than there is in it. So he's done a lot. He's had definitely an interesting career. And it's sad to see him go, but it's good to see him make that choice. He, you know, fought through his injuries and he made it back to the London game. So I think he deserves a lot of applause, and it'll be unfortunate to not see him compete anymore. But certainly our hats off to him for a great career.
Yeah, we're going to turn the page in swimming, the Michael Phelps and Milorad Kavik page, and hopefully we have other rivalries that equal this one. It'll be tough, but hopefully we can have other rivals that equal this one. And it was fun while it lasted, and it was cool because, you know, Milorad Kavik was one of those guys that you could tell got under Michael Phelps' skin. There weren't very many. So the fact that, you know, he was the guy who, what did he say, you know, because Michael was complaining about the suits, Milorad came back and said, well, if you're going to complain about it, I'll buy you a suit so that you don't have any excuses once I beat you. That's kind of like, that's cool. That's kind of like WWF style, you know.
Yeah, of course, came back to bite him when he didn't beat him, but, you know.
It did. But you know what? Just the fact that he could step up. And I know Michael. I know Milorad Kavik. And I think that a lot of what he did was also to gain that interest and the support and the interest from the swimming world. He didn't want to make it vanilla. He wanted to add a little spice to it, and he did that. And he was really good at doing that. And you know, he was able to get under Michael's skin, and he was able to step up and say, you know what, let's do this. And he lost by a fingernail. How he would have changed history had he won that 100 fly at the 2008 Olympic Games. You know, and he was able to take that into 2009 and get under his skin again. And actually they both swam faster in 2009. So that was pretty cool as well. So, you know what, good for him. Hopefully he goes on and stays close to the sport and continues to do what he's doing. And, and it'll be fun to watch him outside of the pool.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things that when we hear, we'll certainly pass along to our listeners. I know in swimming it's a little hard sometimes to keep up with your favorite athletes once they retire, because it's not it's not a big three sport where suddenly our athletes get followed by the paparazzi. But when we hear stuff about Mike Kavik, we'll certainly pass that along.
Yes.
Now, on the next note, here's an interesting, just a quick note on another the topic of athletes outside of the pool. It was recently released last week that Brendan Hansen was named to the board of the USA Swimming Foundation. Now, anyone who's met Brendan, I think, can attest to the fact that he's probably one of the nicest, most put-together guys that we've had in this sport. So I think him being on the board of directors and supporting what the USA Swimming Foundation does, I think, without question, was a smart move by the foundation, by the board. So congratulations to Brendan, and it's great to see that. And hopefully, Felipe, we'll see more athletes have the opportunity to transition to roles like this as they retire in the future.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great, because I think, again, you have younger athletes, period, who are joining this committee and are able to they're able to share their influences, and they're able to share their stories and make a difference in the sport. And I think we need to see more of that. We need to see more of that, just because at some point, as is the case in everything, the old guard needs to be relieved, and you need to be able to do it with guys like Brendan Hansen.
Yeah, he can fill that role. I mean, whatever they need him to do, he's going to be a great ambassador for the sport. So good for Brendan, and great for USA Swimming.
Yes.
I think that was a fantastic pickup. So
yes.
Now, Felipe, we are going to get into the meat of our show. And this, we may or may not have some agreements on this, but we're gonna make the call as we go, and then next month we'll come back and tally. And, of course, what I'm talking about is the 2012 Golden Goggle Awards. Recently, the nominees were released, and, of course, as always, the choice and voting options, the voting options are Breakout Performer of the Year, Perseverance Award, Coach of the Year, Relay Performance of the Year, a Race of the Year for both men and women, and, of course, the finale to the night will be the Female and Male Athletes of the Year. Now, these are interesting, because like anything else, people have their own opinions, people have their bias, and at the end, when all is said and done, people like to complain about how much politics or whatnot have to do with issuing these awards. And I think it's great. I mean, it's an opportunity for the swimming community to be a little, I mean, we're not ever going to be the Emmys. We're not going to be the Oscars, but we're not trying to be. But we have our own night. It stands on its own. We get, some legitimate stars from even outside the world of swimming to attend these things. I've had the opportunity. I've been blessed to attend several of these Golden Goggle Awards over the years. And they're great events, and I think it's fantastic, and the people who support them, and it's all for a good cause. So I'm glad to see that this is continuing. It's going so strong. It will be at the Marriott Marquis Times Square in New York City, and that's November 19th on a Sunday. Now, the online votes, you can go to usaswimming.org and cast your votes. They contribute to 5% of the final poll. So honestly, it doesn't sound like a Ryan Lochte tweet-a-thon or whatever is really going to make or break the deal. But I think it's good that they have fan involvement. I actually think it's good they do it this way, because otherwise it would become a popularity contest, and we don't want that. I mean, I don't think it would be fair for an athlete who meets the criteria of the award, perhaps has something just otherworldly to offer to that category, but isn't as well known as someone. I don't think it would be fair for them to lose out on the award. So that's not to say that however else the process is picked is 100% unbiased, but I do think it's good that this isn't an American Idol type thing. So
right.
That said, Felipe, we're going to start with, let's go down the list. You assume he has it. Breakout Performer of the Year. You've got Camille Adams, Haley Anderson, Bria Larson, Katie Ledecky, and Scott Welts. I'm going to let this one, You first.
Simple. Kay Ledecky.
Not going to find any argument from me there.
Do the other nominees even show up?
Well, I think they all definitely had breakout performances, but how do you compare that to, I mean, don't get me wrong, Scott Welts coming out basically of nowhere, that winning that 200 breast at Trials, fantastic. Bria Larson coming out and making the Olympic team, winning that 100 breast stroke, beating Rebecca Soni. You know, she had that false start in the final in London. Who knew if that shook her confidence or whatnot? But that aside, I mean, she had some great swims. But how do you beat individual gold? I don't know how it's even possible. You nearly break the world record and you win individual gold. That to me is a breakout performer.
Right. You know, I think this was a no-brainer. I mean, young girl, she did so well at the Olympics Games. Good for her. She's got such a bright future ahead of her. So, like all of these athletes do, they all do. But it's just, this is one of those that she's just got the edge, and at least my vote would go to her.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find too many people who disagree with that one. Now, here's an interesting one. And this is one that might get kind of controversial depending on people's point of views. But Perseverance Award. We've got Tyler Clary, Anthony Irvin, Jessica Hardy, and Davis Tarwater. Now, all of them, I think, meet the criteria for perseverance. Perhaps less so in certain manners. And that's where the interesting part of this comes. John Lone on SwimWorldMagazine.com wrote a piece where he thinks Jessica Hardy is a no-brainer for the Perseverance Award. Now, as he pointed out in the article, that's a tough one for a lot of people to swallow because a lot of people, you know, although her ban for testing positive came back as being from a contaminated supplement, a lot of people don't believe that. A lot of people still believe in the rule of strict liability, that it doesn't matter if it was intentional or not. You should take the medicine, you know, pun much intended, you know, and that's tricky because that is one where bias may come into play. Then you have Tyler Clary, who he made some, as we've talked about on the show, disparaging comments toward Michael Phelps. That's not going to earn you any fans. Davis Tarwater, you know, there were some internet message board people who, you know, think that, you know, Davis being involved in the Olympics and having a medal now and stuff, it just was maybe a gift from his old training partner because he didn't earn his spot. He was given his spot, some people say, which, as we've discussed on the show, hey, he was in that spot because he earned it. But, you know, lots of different outlooks. And then you have Anthony Irvin, who I'll start this off. Anthony Irvin's got my vote. I don't agree with John Lund. I don't think that there's a no-brainer in this one. To me, it's Anthony Irvin. This is a guy who not only takes so long off, but makes the Olympic team. Now he's out on the World Cup circuit, swimming great, swimming faster than ever. And it's not just that he had a lapse in time and came back. As he's talked about in his Rolling Stone magazine column, this guy went through some serious stuff in his time away from the pool. And yet, here he is, happy, healthy, and better than ever. But this is a tough one, Felipe. So give us who you think and why.
It's Anthony Irvin.
Wait a minute. We're agreeing 2 for 2 here. There's something wrong here.
Well, you know, I think for me, it's Anthony Irvin for different reasons. I know Anthony on a personal level. I trained with him in 2000, the summer that he did win the Olympic Games and at the pinnacle of his career at a really young age. And I think the maturity level wasn't there yet. And he made some mistakes along the way. He wins his Olympic gold medal. He comes back, swims maybe another year or two, falls off the face of the earth as far as the swimming world is concerned, goes away for 12 years. I think it was actually 11 years. And it's just being able to go away and for such a long period of time and learning more about yourself than you could have ever have learned had you stayed in the sport. And coming back, and after all the trials and tribulation, coming back to the sport and being influenced not by other athletes, but being influenced by kids. His influence to come back came from his teachings at Imagine Swim School. I don't know if you've noticed, he wears Imagine Swimming shirts.
Absolutely.
His influences came from teaching young kids, kids how to swim in New York. And just being able to get back in the water and being able to put it all together in such a short period of time and being able to put all of the demons that haunted him for such a long period of time behind him and have such a positive outlook on the sport now and being such an ambassador for the sport. Jason Lezak, rooming with him at the Olympic Games in 2012. And when I talked to Jason, he said, hey, this kid is a completely different, much more mature athlete now. And he's just a good person. And knowing where Anthony came from to where he is now, hands down, he is the person that deserves that award more than anyone.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think this is one of those things that transcends swimming. You have to look at not just what's happening in the pool, but also where they came from without. And that's not to say that Tyler Clary and Jessica Hardy and Davis Tarwater don't have reason to be in this category. They're all absolutely worthwhile nominees, but I just think that this one goes to Anthony Irvin. So we're in agreement on that one.
He's got my vote, and he adds, you know, he has a little color to the sport. You know, he wears some of those battle scars on his sleeves, as you can say. He's got two fully sleeved tattoos, and those are constant reminders of where he's come from. Fully sleeved arms of tattoos, I should have said. And that's just a constant reminder of where he's been and where he is now. And like you said, everybody is deserving of this award, but sometimes somebody's just a little bit more deserving than the others. And that's got.
Yeah, there's got to be a winner, right? Like any race, there's always one winner, and that doesn't mean that the other people involved aren't fantastic, but you can only have one winner.
Right.
All right, next up, Coach of the Year. You've got Bob Bowman, Terry McKeever, Dave Salo, Todd Schmitz, and Greg Troy. And now this one's interesting because when you look at Coach of the Year, you can't just look at one athlete. Now they all have at least one amazing athlete, more than others.
Yep.
So you got to look at the grand scheme of things, I think, to make this a fair award. So Felipe, who walks away in your mind with Coach of the Year?
It's got to be Bob Bowman, and it's not Bob Bowman because of Michael Phelps. So he is the only coach under his stable, at least, that has more than one standout swimmer, I should preface that. All of these coaches have more than one standout swimmer. I mean, Dave Salo has a stable of standout swimmers. But I think Bob Bowman would take this just because of the influence that he had on his swimmers outside of Michael Phelps and what his swimmers did at the Olympic Games.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a toss-up. I think you're largely going to find the battle come down between Bob Bowman and Greg Troy. Obviously, Todd Schmitz and Missy Franklin are going to be in consideration because of what Missy's done. But I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, it's going to come down to Bob. Of course, there's Michael, but you've also got Allison Schmidt, Greg Troy. Of course, you've got Ryan Lochte, but you've also got Elizabeth Beisel. So it's going to be difficult. I think, and maybe it's just a little politicized, I don't know, although I still think it's deserving, but I think Bob Bowman's going to walk away with it as well, particularly just because, you know, it was the Olympics were Michael's swan song, and Allison had just, and I think Allison Schmidt just gets so much less credit than she deserves. I mean, she had such an amazing Olympic Games, and I don't think we've seen nearly enough of her on in the media, on television. She is probably, and I'm not saying this because we're talking about her, but she's probably the only person that I've ever met who, when everybody walks away after talking with her, they can't help but think, that's the nicest person in the world.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a question. It's fact. You meet Allison Schmidt, you can't help but smile, and she is just ridiculously nice, always smiling, so happy, so polite, absolutely a wonderful person. So, you know, I would love to see her get more credit, but that's a whole other topic on another day. But, okay, Bob Bowman, Coach of the Year.
I would say Bob Bowman as well, just because the medal haul, that just if you look at what Michael and Allison did, just those two athletes right there, I think they walked away with, correct me if I'm wrong, did Michael have 5 golds at this Olympics?
I have to be exact. It sounds right to me, but I don't want to be incorrect.
If you want to go with Michael's 5 and Allison's 3, just if you based it on performance and medal haul, that's two athletes of his that walked away with 8 gold medals. I'm not sure if there's another coach that can claim that. And there might be, but I just off the top of my head, I'm not sure if Greg Troy's swimmers were able to accomplish that feat.
Well, and that's an interesting perspective, because you do have Michael and Allison who also were able to compete on relays, and of course Ryan was as well. But Elizabeth Beisel swimming under Coach Troy, she swims 400 IM and the 200 backstroke. She's not going to get the opportunities for a relay, so that alone takes away shots at getting those extra medals. Where that falls into the, where that falls into the grand scheme of things, that's up for debate, because those are grueling events, and relays, of course, you get to count on some teammates. You have to hold your own without question, but, that's your team effort, and then you've got just your individual effort. So that's a debate that I think has raged since the beginning of time and will always continue. But let's certainly give credit where credit's due. Elizabeth Beisel taking silver in the 400 IM and a bronze medal in the 200 back. I mean, that's an impressive haul right there. Yeah. And as you talked about, Dave Salo, his stable of athletes, Terry McKeever, Dana Vollmer having just an absolutely incredible meet, particularly that Hunter Fly. I mean, this is definitely an award where it's top to bottom. I mean, you could just about throw a dart, and wherever it lands, I don't think people would have a legitimate argument against it, just because the arguments for each one are so strong for them.
Right, that's correct. So, with all of that said, I would still think that influence and accomplishments, it's got to be Bob Bowman.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Bob's going to pull this one out. It definitely sets up an interesting scenario for next year and subsequent years not having Michael. But it'll definitely be interesting, I think, this year. All certainly deserving, all certainly wonderful people, but this one I think is going to go to Bob Bowman. Now, relay performance of the year. Women's 200 or women's 800 free relay, men's 800 free relay, women's medley relay, 400 medley relay, and men's 400 medley relay. Felipe, take it away. Silence falls over the crowd.
I think I'm gonna have you lead this one, because there's not a clear cut winner. I think they're all deserving. Got it. I would almost say it's kind of, they're all equally deserving. I mean, the men's 4x100, the men's 4x200, the women's 4x200. I would almost want to give the edge to the women's 4x200.
No particular reason, just liking that one.
I just seriously no. I mean, just an unbelievable relay. First of all, I mean, just the talent on that relay was unbelievable. But you can, I mean, the same could be said for all of the other relays. So it's just one of those things where you kind of talk yourself into a corner every time you start talking about one of the relays.
Yeah, and this is probably one of the more difficult ones. One of the more difficult ones to select. I'm going to go, I think, with the I'm going to go with the women's 400 medley relay. That's going to be my go. I just think it was such a strong team, and to break the world record by almost 2 seconds. To win gold by almost 2 seconds and break the world record. I think there's just a lot to be said about that, and particularly given, Missy being on the relay after such just a grueling event schedule, to come in ahead of Australia and Japan. I'm going to go ahead and give my vote for the women's medley relay.
I think I'm gonna be there with you, because I had totally forgotten that the women had broken the world record in that event, so that would give them the edge. So in one where I'm not particularly going in any direction, I think you got it. I think that's it. That's got to be it.
Yeah, I think they did so well. Phelps, of course, on the men's medley relay, the Americans winning, and they won by almost the same margin as the women did. I think the women were, I think it was 1.97 seconds over Australia, and for the men, I think it was 1.90 or 1.91 ahead of Japan. And of course, Phelps being able to end his career in the fashion that we all hoped he would, but they didn't get the world record, and I think to me that's the difference, because for the men, whereas the women got the world record, the men were still, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was they were still a little over 2 seconds off of the world record.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so that's to me is going to be the difference for the relays there as far as who's going to walk away with that Golden Goggle Award. But again, all great performances. Now, this, I think there's on the outset an obvious look for this next award, but again, we're gonna have to consider each one, because all were just absolutely ridiculous swims. But race of the year for the women, you've got Allison Schmidt in the 200 free, Katie Ledecky in the 800 free, Missy Franklin in the 200 back, Rebecca Soni in the 200 breast, and Dana Vollmer in the 100 fly.
Jesus,
throw a dart. That's what I'm telling you. Throw a dart, blindfolded.
Okay. Missy Franklin, world record 200 back. Rebecca Soni, first athlete ever to go under 220. Dana Vollmer, first athlete ever to go under 56. Katie Ledecky comes in and breaks 23-year-old American record. Janet Evans, American record. Allison Schmidt comes and goes, you know, just blows away Camille Muffat in the 200 free. Goes 153.6. All of them. it's a five-way tie. I'm not. No,
unfortunately,
you know,
I don't think they do ties to the Golden Goggles, my friend.
I'm not going
to
offend any of these girls. I'm actually going to abstain on this vote.
All right. So now that we know Felipe doesn't have a backbone,
nope.
I'm going to go ahead and say I'm going to say Dana Vollmer in the 100 fly, and I say that because that record was so tough.
Oh, my God, yeah.
She was going after it and after it and after it, and when it looked like it was ready to go, you know, at trials, she just didn't quite get it. But she came back and did it on the grandest stage of them all in taking individual gold. And this is something that I'm gonna go ahead and just go beyond just the swim. It's she didn't make the team in 2008.
Right, that's right.
And so for her to come back, I'm curious actually why she didn't get nominated
Perseverance.
For the Perseverance Award.
Absolutely.
Because the things that she's gone through with her heart problems and not making the team in 2008 after being golden in 2004, to come back and win individual gold in world record time in the 100 fly, I'm going to have to go with Dana.
Who missed that one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Dana in the women's 100 fly for that one. No.
All right.
Men.
Stop there. I'm going to go with Rebecca Soni.
Now Felipe's growing a backbone.
No, I'm going to go. Look, and Missy Franklin and Dana Vollmer, Katie Ledecky, Allison Schmidt, absolutely, you know, it's one of those events that's so unbelievably difficult, or one of these awards that's so unbelievably difficult to choose from. But the athletes, they're all so deserving. But for me, it was Rebecca Soni. She did two things. She's the only swimmer, female swimmer, who was able to go back-to-back gold medals in an individual event. She did in 2008 and 2012, okay? And she was also the only swimmer in the history of the sport to ever break 2 minutes and 20 seconds in the 200 breast. So we saw two things that have never been done before, going into 220 and being able to go back-to-back. So that's why Rebecca Soni would get my vote. Not that the other girls are not deserving. They all are. But that's why she would get my vote. And Perseverance as well. I mean, Rebecca is 25. This is not her first run at it. It's her second run, and she's been extremely consistent. So as far as performance of the year and putting it together, after getting beat, by the way, in the 100 breast, which must have been a shot to her. So after getting beat in the 200 in the 100 breast, she was able to come back and persevere in the 200 breast. So as far as performance goes, I would give it to Rebecca.
All right. Now we're going to have to go through these next three, the last three, a little bit quicker. We're running out of time, but race of the year for the men. We've got Oh man, this is just a crazy group, just like the women's. Nathan Adrian and the Hunter Free. Matt Grievers, 100 back. Tyler Clary, 200 back. Michael Phelps, 200 IM, and Ryan Lochte, 400 IM. Felipe, you are not allowed to abstain.
Nathan Adrian, I don't care about offending the guys. I them all they want. Nathan Adrian, hands down, Nathan Adrian. If you talk about underdog, or if you talk about a lock or a sure bet, James Magnussen, he was it. And coming into this race, you know, Nathan Adrian, he manned up. He stood up and said, okay, let's do this. Nobody wins before the race even starts. So he stood up, did something that hasn't been done since 1988, at least for the men. You know, Matt Biondi was the last U.S. Olympian who won the 100 free. So Nathan stood up with his best time, 47.5, and won the event. And he did it in such remarkable fashion, being able to hold off James Magnussen. It's not the easiest thing to do, especially when you know what James Magnussen does in the back half of 100. So I would give it to Nathan, although everyone, of course, is deserving. Matt Grievers, Tyler Clary, Michael Phelps, and Ryan. I mean, they're all deserving of it, but I would give it to Nathan just because of the nature of which he accomplished his feat. So that's my vote.
Yeah, I think that was certainly a good swim, and it was my initial reaction, but I think I'm going to have to say that the award goes to Phelps in the 200 IM, and I say that because going into it, I think it had that same kind of mystique that that 100 free had, as far as you assume a lock. People assume Ryan Lochte being the guy who broke the first first record post super suit era, and he did it in this event, and people expected that this was going to be his to walk away from. He was taking the crown from Michael, and why that Hunter Free certainly had passion, and it certainly had just a lot of like sitting on the edge of your seat, the whole thing. But to me, when you're talking about the actual race itself and the way that 200 IM went back and forth between Michael and Ryan, and Michael being able to pull it out ahead of Ryan and kind of break all those expectations and people saying that he was past his prime and Ryan was the new guy, I'm going to have to go with Michael in the 200 IM for that male race of the year. Now, the last two marquee events of the Golden Goggles, male and female athlete of the year. I think these, female may be easier than the male, but female, we've got four options: Missy Franklin, Allison Schmidt, Rebecca Soni, or Dana Vollmer.
Missy Franklin.
Yeah, I'm going to go Missy Franklin. Male athlete of the year.
They're all just
Nathan Adrian, Matt Grievers, Ryan Lochte, or Michael Phelps.
The female's not that easy. It's just, I think it's going to go to Missy Franklin, just simply because she was going into the Olympic Games, she was what everybody was talking about. Coming out of the Olympic Games, she was what everybody was talking about.
She didn't disappoint at the Olympics.
She didn't disappoint. She just, she held on and she was able to come through in her moment. So that's what she did. And then male athlete of the year, I think I would go with the popular vote, which would be Michael Phelps.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to go. I'm actually going to agree with you. This is shockingly scary, but I'm going to agree with you. And again, it's one of those things that I think he actually went into the Olympic Games not expected to do much, and it's all because of Ryan. And I think he was another one of those guys that went in, came out, and didn't disappoint. I think he exceeded expectations, where Missy, I think, met and exceeded expectations. I think Michael, for the pressure that was placed on him, I think he really blew away expectations. So I think he deserves that award this year.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, 2012, his final year of swimming, Michael Phelps is not going to walk away without this award.
Yeah,
there's no way he walks away. Like, zero chance he walks away without this award, and just because of what he did. And also, he's now the most decorated athletes to ever compete at the Olympic Games. And you know, in good fortune for us, it's a swimmer, so he leaves us yet with another feat that swimming can be proud of. So, zero chance that he doesn't walk away with this.
Absolutely. I agree. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time that we have for today. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Whether you agree with us, whether you disagree with us, by all means, feel free to comment on swimworldmagazine.com. Leave your comments if you have questions, anything you'd like to add to the show. some of your comments we can perhaps read here on the show, and we can discuss those. We'd love to hear your feedback. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio, and we will hopefully be with you again next week.